Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the November 13th edition of Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder. I'm your host, Adam Jason Sinclair, and tonight we will be discussing the Pirelli World Challenge, the International Hot Rod Association, and the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series, as well as whatever other racing news props into the conversation. As we have for the past few weeks, we are joined by Circle Track racer Michael Mullally, who will bring some of her on-track experience and knowledge into the Thunderdome this evening. Hey, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Not too bad. Had an interesting few days and learned some news about some future NASCAR opportunities I'll be sharing a little bit later in the program. But I'm looking forward to going down to the Homestead race this weekend. It should be a really good race.
Yeah, I'm quite jealous, actually. But I hope you enjoy it.
The weather down there will be a lot warmer than the weather you've been having up in your neck of the woods. It's 85. The high today was 85 here in West Palm. I think it was 87 or 88 there in Homestead. And it's supposed to be a little teeny bit cooler tomorrow, but it's going to be a toasty day for all the drivers that come down from the chilly north of North Carolina. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, that does make me quite jealous. I mean, I feel like right now I need a cup of hot cocoa or something.
You know, today I needed a few cold drinks when I got home and sit in the air conditioning. It's a little too warm for this time of year, but that is South Florida for you. Some days it's in the low 50s, and other days it's in the mid-80s, and there's really no telling what the weather's going to do.
Yeah, I'm definitely jealous.
Well, let's get right into it. Looks like our first guest is on hold. So our first guest this evening is Jason Cherry. Cherry is an 18-year-old professional race car driver based out of Annapolis, Maryland, and is already building a momentum with his young racing career. Jason started out racing a year ago with his professional debut in the Pirelli World Challenge TCA class at the beginning of 2014 season. He has spent the past season making a name for himself and developing his driving skills while also reaching back to a community near and dear to his heart.
Jason is the exclusive driver for ASA, Autism Society of America. As a sibling of a 23-year-old brother on the spectrum, Jason hopes to leverage the Motorsports Global platform and his exclusive partnership with the ASA to develop programs to support siblings of individuals on the spectrum in autism awareness.
Hello, Jason, and welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you guys tonight?
Not too bad. Not too bad at all. First off, I want to ask you, has racing always been a dream of yours?
Well, when I had seen that question that you would ask me, there was a lot of thought that went into it. You know, I don't want to directly say that racing has been a dream, but ever since I was a child, there was always speed in one way, shape, form, or another. When I was in fifth grade, my dad picked me up off the school bus, and he had a big go-kart that we had to assemble in the back of the truck. And when we got that assembled, it was pouring down rain, and he took me out there, and we were sliding around in the gravel road that we live off of. And then, of course, it was my turn, and I kept on going at it. And from there, I just, you know, I naturally moved into motocross and doing some enduro racing. I had neighbors that lived out behind me, and they were always older than me. And once I got on my first dirt bike, it was always just a big competition amongst the four of us, and we had about 8 miles of trails in the back that we all just let loose on. When I turned 16, it was about the time to get my driver's license. Before I got my driver's license, I actually completed a Harley-Davidson Rider's Edge course and got my street bike license. So I was on a Ducati Monster S4R before I got my first car, and I was riding to school every day, even in the 35 degrees, freezing my butt off trying to get to school, and I thought I was something else. When I turned, you know, as I was growing older, the motocross, I was kind of growing out of that. I was growing away from it. I was getting tired of hurting myself, and it was kind of inevitable with that type of sport. And I wanted to naturally move into MotoGP racing. I thought it was really neat. It was something different. It was cool. And I honestly thought I would do really well at it because two wheels felt really natural for me. When approaching my parents about that, they obviously were not in support, and I can't blame them for it because now the speeds are approaching 180 miles per hour plus. And so me kind of hearing that no just kind of turned around and said, well, how about let's do some Formula Car racing? My mom gave me the go-ahead, and I kind of looked into it and reached out to Bertle Roos Racing School out of Pennsylvania. It's a great school. It's kind of similar to the Skip Barber format, but the instructor is a little bit more one-on-one with you. And I completed that course in April of 2013. From there, I went in to do some regional and national races, and now I'm here.
That's pretty awesome. You recently held a charity auction to support the Autism Society. How'd that go, and how do you plan on promoting the charity through your auto racing career?
The auction, I'd want to kind of step back a little bit and just kind of thank those that have supported me. Bell Racing, I reached out to them early on in my career in the 2014 season, and I asked for support from them. They provided a helmet to be custom painted by Mike Savage out of Florida, Savage Designs. He did an awesome job, and we were racing the whole season with this helmet that was intended as a charity helmet. We knew that we would be creating some new programs within the Autism Society, and we needed some way to begin funding those programs. So the whole idea was, well, let's get a piece of artwork that's going to gain a huge following, be sitting on the other kids that come to the track on their heads, and just kind of help brand myself as a sports idol for these kids with autism. And at that point, we moved forward. We worked with Dean Case of Mazda Motorsports. He was able to help press out the auction through social media, and the auction began at SEMA and ended at the end of SEMA. And we ended up selling the helmet for $1,500. It went to a great family. It went to somebody with a daughter on the spectrum. So I know it's going to be taken care of really well, and those proceeds are going to go straight back over to the three programs that I'm creating within the Autism Society of America.
How do you gauge the 2014 season as a whole?
Well, you know, coming into the 2014 pro season, I'd done, I want to say, two regional races with a F2000-styled car, two national races with an F1600-styled car, and I was, you know, planning on committing to a full season of F1600. I think that those coming up through out of go-karts into racing, you know, whatever direction you come from, the F1600 series is very competitive. And those cars taught me a lot about driver control and just kind of really feeling what's going on underneath you and around you. I mean, you touch wheels in one of those cars, you're going airborne or something bad's going to happen. And with only an inch of ride height or so, you feel everything. So moving out of those cars, we decided to switch over to Pirelli World Challenge. It was a very attractive series. They had really good TV coverage, TV programs. And I signed up with the team. Didn't really know exactly what I was getting into, and the 2014 season was just a big year for us to learn. We're only in the motorsports industry for 1 year. We knew it was going to be a year to learn. We knew it would be a year for me to develop my skills, learn tracks, and we came at it with a very reasonable approach, and I'd say that it was a great season. I mean, I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot about professionalism, how to run a team, and just meeting all these people. It's a really great environment at these pro race weekends, and everyone's so friendly. The competition director, all the stewards, the safety workers. It's just such a close-knit community, and I love being around it.
Which racetracks do you feel you performed best at this year, and what's your favorite racetrack of all time?
Perform best at? Well, obviously, as a driver, we'd all want to think that we performed pretty good at all of them. I think the weekend for me to overcome was when we went to Canadian Tire Motorsports Park for, I want to say it was rounds 3, 4, and 5 at the Pirelli World Challenge, or 2, 3, and 4. We had missed the second race at Barber Motorsports Park was rained out, so they had shifted that and added it to the CTMP schedule. When we went up to CTMP, it was a track I'd never seen. It was very intimidating. Thank God they paved some of the areas that you normally would go off because it's such a high-speed track that when you go off, it's a hard hit. During qualifying, I had a wheel fall off, which set me back in qualifying time. It was pretty intimidating. It scared me, to be honest. It was leading up into turn 8, which is a very high-speed right-hander, and my front left came off, and if it were to dug in a little bit more, it could have rolled the car. So at that point, I started at the very back of the pack after qualifying. The first race came by, I progressed through the field, set me up for a pretty good position. We were still developing the car. Let alone the fact that we just gotten the car back together after having a big mechanical failure. Second race was done, and I qualified on pole for the third race, which was great. Had a really good start, was starting to check out of the field. I ended up turning the fastest lap of the race and set track record, which is why I think that it's one of the tracks that I perform best at, especially given the fact that it's a horsepower track and I'm driving a Mazda MX-5, which is the car in TCA that has the least amount of power. After leading the race a little bit, a touring car ended up coming in contact with me down the back straight. It knocked my brake pads out, melted my ABS sensor, and broke some other stuff, and I ended up dropping back to six. Now, the favorite track, I think that I want to go back to Barber Motorsports Park because it's just such a prestigious track. I mean, the facility is amazing. The museum was awesome. I mean, I didn't even get to really spend much time in the physical museum, but the fact that they have all those collector cars, motorcycles, it really adds a really good feel and presence for those fans coming in. And for me, at that time, I kind of was a fan, if you think about it, because it was my first pro race. I didn't understand what a pro weekend would be like. It was huge. And it's an event that I won't forget. I lost the first place by 0.2 seconds. It was a really good battle between Shea Holbrook and I, and it was an awesome weekend to be debuting in the world of professional auto racing.
I know this year was your first year in the Pirelli World Challenge. Do you plan on competing in full season next season?
You know, things are still kind of taking shape. There's only so much I can say in regards to that. The Pirelli World Challenge is a great series. It offers great TV coverage, and the venues are second to none. Right now, it's just really a matter of where our sponsors want me to be. We're working on some new sponsors. We're working on manufacturer support, and we're just kind of, everything's up in the air. We're open to anything. Who knows? I mean, we could maybe even go Super Stadium Truck Racing. I love what Robbie Gordon is doing with that series. It's an awesome spectator sport. I love watching it. I know the fans love watching it. And it'd be a really cool series to drive in, but I think I could definitely safely say that I'll be staying in the road racing and in either Continental Tire or Pirelli World Challenge.
Did you see the off-road race they had there in St. Petersburg in connection with the World Challenge?
Yeah.
Robbie
that was
Gordon?
An awesome race. I mean, before an IndyCar event, the trucks are flying. It almost looked like the trucks would get higher than the catch fences, which is really neat. And the fact that Robbie Gordon allows that series for a little bit of bumping and grinding and just the drivers to kind of come on really aggressive, it's awesome. And it provides a great opportunity, a great marketing platform for any sponsors coming on. It's really cool that they're driving tires that are for street tires for trucks. I mean, that's really great branding for Toyo. He just puts on such a show. He has the rigs there selling the T-shirts and all the other products. He has the energy drinks, Speed Energy that he owns. He's passing out the product. It's such a feel-good environment. And I always love watching it. And, you know, they race rain or shine, bumping. I watched the SEMA show as well. There was a couple of trucks that got hooked in together, and they were all pushing each other into the wall until they ended up unhooking each other. One of the trucks ended up flipping and rolling, and the racing just keeps on going. It's you know, there's never any tension between the drivers because they understand the fact that that's all part of the sport.
Yeah. Now my co-host has a few questions for you.
Who is your pick for the 2014 NASCAR Sprint Cup champion?
Well, you know, that's one of the series of racing that I don't really follow too strongly. I'd like to say Joey Logano. He's always been somebody that I've kind of kept an eye on, and I know he's doing pretty well in the points right now. So, you know, I'm gonna pick Joey, and you know, it'll be interesting to see how the races kind of come down to what it comes down to.
That's a great pick. If you weren't racing, what do you think you'd be doing now?
Well, where I'm located, which is kind of the D.C. area, metropolitan area, we actually know the general manager of Velocity TV pretty well, Bob Scanlon. He's been very kind to us. He got us backstage at the Velocity Live event at SEMA, and he's been a huge help. He's been a great guidance to me. And honestly, if racing, if I can recognize in the next couple of years that I can't really make a very well living form of living through racing, then I'm going to be involved one way or another. I'm very interested in the idea of business and marketing and maybe somehow becoming involved at Velocity TV and the production behind it all.
What steps do you take to prepare for a race?
Well, obviously, physical and mental strength is very important. I run every day. I go to the gym all the time. I'm always attempting to just kind of better myself and make sure I'm in of physically strong shape, because we go to track weekends where it's 100 degrees out. I mean, we went to Mid-Ohio, and it ended up my cool suit system kept on failing. And it was definitely very important that I was in shape at that moment, at that time, because that car was getting hot. And I can't even imagine what it would be like to have a cool shirt system fail in a GTGTS format car. As well as exercising, I also watch track video a lot, and I try to get any data from drivers that I'm friends with just to kind of help study the track. But, you know, for me, it's coming out of a motocross background and endurance background. When we do these endurance races, we're not allowed to look at the track prior to the race. So we're blasting through 10 miles of trees that we had never seen before, going for a win. And I've always had just a really good ability to catch on to the environment very quick. When I go out for my first practice, I'm generally, you know, only a second off of my race speed or somewhere in there. And I'm able to pick up speed really well. For any drivers that are getting into the sport, it really helps to have a simulator. That's something that I do not have and I wish I had. And that provides a really great format to not only feel the car. And I mean, you obviously have steering input with how high tech these simulators are nowadays, but it also gives you a chance to kind of learn turn-in points and just the track itself, reference points. So.
How are you planning on getting support from the Pirelli World Challenge to host families dealing with autism at professional events?
Well, actually, you know, the Pirelli World Challenge has been very supportive this past season. It's not really a matter of planning. We already got their support. They've done a great job. They work with me to provide the paddock space, the paddock tickets and paddock space. You know, they've just been a huge supporter of what I'm doing. And all the guys at the Pirelli World Challenge are such great guys. They're really down to earth, and they're so easy to talk to. And if I'm with them next season, I know that they'll be in full support again.
How do you deal with, like, because I race too, so I know that there's a lot of pressure. So how do you deal with all the pressure?
You know, for me, and it's kind of always been this way, I've always approached racing with just such an open-minded attitude of I'm out here to have fun. You know, even if I've been on the radio with my crew guy, Tim Mincy Sr. He really loves working with me because even when I have, you know, three tires going flat and my car knocked out of alignment because of contact, I'm out there just having a blast, sliding around, sliding off the track, and just keeping that really, that low-key, low-pressure state of mind of just having fun has always helped me perform really well, and that's what I would suggest to other drivers out there. I mean, you're driving a race car, and there's nothing really cooler than that, and if you're already looking at it as a business, you know, the physical driving part as a business, then you're kind of missing the whole point of driving a race car in the first place. Like, I understand the fact that part of the racing industry is business related. You're not really a professional driver until you have your whole weekend paid off, covered, prior to even showing up at the track. That's what I define as a professional. And once you get there, it's just a matter of having fun, and it'll come to you.
I'd now like to open up for questions for my listeners. If anybody has a question for Jason Cherry, please call in now to 215-383-3681. What's your favorite racing series aside from the Pirelli World Challenge and the Robbie Gordon series?
You know, I really place a lot of emphasis on spectator sports. I think that's just kind of a type of sport that's so engaging with the fans. Like NASCAR, I mean, you're sitting in a big oval where you can see all of the racetrack all at the same time, and there's always something exciting happening. You can take different lines through it. But a more aggressive approach, like I said, was the Super Stadium Trucks. And I'd say that the Global Rallycross is a really great series. It's super engaging with the fans. There's bumping, there's grinding, just like Super Stadium Trucks, jumping, loud noises. You can take different lines. They even throw in, like, the Joker turn where you have to kind of take the longer turn at least once throughout the race, which really kind of tosses things up. Robbie does a really good job of promoting that Joker. I know that they do these full course yellow things where they bunch the field back up and then they do a restart halfway through the race. and, you know, series like that that are just engaging. A lot of stuff over in Europe. I also like the British Touring Car series.
Uh-huh.
I wish that that was a series that kind of was able to make its way over to the U.S. The Touring Car and Parallel World Challenge was able to expand to that. I think it would be really attractive, especially if they were able to put them out on track at the same time as the GTS. Parallel World Challenge, I'm not sure if you guys are aware of it. They are splitting the GT and GTS classes next year. They're going to be running GT, GTA for the non-professionals and the new GT Cup class together. And then GTS is going to be out on the track by themselves, which is great because it will help kind of break up all this conflict between the GT cars lapping the GTS traffic. But I think it would be really neat in a few years to maybe see a touring car that's super aggressive, like the Red Touring Car series, running with the GTS cars. And it would be really interesting to watch them kind of duke it out there because the backfield of the GTS cars would be running with the front field of the touring cars.
How do you feel about the rumors that have been going around for a couple of years that they're thinking about bringing the DTM series into the United States in cooperation with a couple of different racing series?
Well, I read an article. The most recent thing I had read was about kind of trying to work it within the Trans Am series.
Mm-hmm.
With that being said, I think Trans Am still has a lot of growing to do. It was really strong at one point, and right now it just doesn't have the TV package. I think the one important thing to make that DTM series very successful in the U.S. is really good TV coverage. I think it's a series that deserves a lot of attention, such as NASCAR. And right now, sports car racing just doesn't have the coverage unless you're in IMSA, United Tudor Sports Car. And then at those weekends, they're not going to run DTM at the same time as that because you kind of need that one series that the lower series follows around. If it were to come over to U.S., you know, it's such a toss-up. It's either going to be a hit or a miss, depending on how they promote it. And, you know, I'd love to see it over here, personally.
You just mentioned the Tudor series. How do you feel about their first season under the unified banner? Do you think they did a good job, or do you think they have some more adaptations that need to be made?
You know, I've followed the series a little bit, mostly in regards to watching the live races. I was at the 12 Hours of Sebring. I think they did a really great job of promoting it, as always. I think generally it was definitely a step forward. I had read at one point that there was some big controversy between two Porsche teams and they had black flagged the wrong car or something and ruined the race, and they made calls like that. And I understand that that's going to happen at racing series, but at that level, I think that just sorting out those small things would put on a better on-track performance. And, you know, every series can grow in one way, shape, form, or another. I think that they're all great. I mean, it's auto racing, and I think that Tudor has some really awesome venues that they go to. So, you know, they're doing good.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the program this evening. You seem like you have a good head on your shoulders, and you'll do very well no matter what series you end up deciding on for next season.
Yeah, I appreciate the kind comments. It was nice talking with you.
Thank you very much. Once again, I'd like to thank Jason Cherry for taking time out of his busy schedule to join me in the Thunderdome. As I said a few minutes ago, he has a lot of good ideas about the future of motorsports. And if those are the sort of people who are coming to this sport, there's a long and prosperous future ahead. I'd also like to thank Michael Mullally for helping me out with the questions and analysis. Next week, she's going to take a little bit more of a leading role, as I have a previous commitment that I'm going to get into in a few moments. She'll be having one of her racing buddies there from Washington on the program, Austin Weber. I'm also scheduled to have Jeremy Mayfield returning to the program next week. So I wish you lots of luck next week, and I'm sure you can handle it.
I hope so.
After a full season of racing, the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series Championship will be decided in the Ford EcoBoost 400 this weekend at Florida's Homestead Miami Speedway on Sunday, November 16th.
ESPN will have a live telecast of the final race in the chase for the NASCAR Sprint Cup with a special two-hour edition of NASCAR Countdown presented by 5-Hour Energy at 1 p.m. Eastern to set up the championship race and the race's green flag at 3:15 p.m. While the normal 43 cars will compete in the race, only four drivers, Denny Hamlin, Kevin Harvick, Ryan Newman, and Joey Logano, are eligible for the championship, and the highest finisher of the four will win this title. Extended post-race will air on SportsCenter with analyst Ricky Craven in the studio. ESPN2 will air NASCAR Sprint Cup qualifying on November 14th at 6 p.m.
The weekend begins with the Ford 200 NASCAR Camping World Truck Series race on Friday, November 14th. As stated in previous episodes, if you can only visit a NASCAR event for one day, Friday is usually the best day to go. Gates open at the Homestead Miami Speedway at 11:30 a.m., and tickets are still available. Tomorrow, I'm lucky enough to be at the track covering the event for both Speedway Digest and the NASCAR Zone Facebook page, as well as making mental notes to share with my listeners on the November 20th program. The track will also host the Ford EcoBoost 300 NASCAR Nationwide Series race on Saturday, November 15th, and the race will air live on ESPN2 at 4 p.m., with green flag at 4:45 p.m. It should be an interesting weekend there. They announced yesterday that that Sunday's race, the Ford 400, has sold out. I don't know how many of my listeners here have had the pleasure of visiting the Homestead Miami Speedway on the day when it sold out. But in my opinion, it's not the best track to have a sellout crowd at. I don't think there's really any track that's good to have a sellout crowd at. Maybe Daytona, because they do have more space in their seats. And that's the main issue the Homestead seems to have. They have open grandstands that have little numbers on the seats. And you're supposed to squeeze into little teeny tiny seats. And most NASCAR fans aren't the tiniest little people. So if you enjoy sitting on somebody's lap, I'm sure you'll enjoy going to the race on Sunday. But personally, I think it's more fun to spread out on the couch and be comfortable and watch a race on television. Tomorrow, the Ford 200, it isn't sold out. I know that they've sold more tickets than they have in the past. But because it's not sold out, because it's all general admission, because there's a little, it'll give you a little bit more space to move around. You also get to see not only the Camping World Truck Series event at night, but we also get to see both the Sprint Cup and the Nationwide Series. The Sprint Cup qualifying is held tomorrow, as well as the Camping World Truck Series qualifying. So you can see a little bit of everything. And as I said in the previous episode, the first day is generally the best day to go, in my experience. It's the same at sports car races. It's the same at drag races. Any weekend event, if you get to go on the first day and you're not able to go on the other days, you're going to miss something, yes, but you're going to get a general idea of how the event takes place, how it's organized, and you'll have a much better shot at actually seeing the competitors in a slightly more relaxed setting. For those of us who enjoy getting autographs, that makes it a little easier, because then you'll never get an autograph from anybody on Sunday unless you push your way up to the front and they won't even look at you. But tomorrow you have a better shot at that sort of thing. Have you ever been to a NASCAR event?
No. My aunt has, and last year she was going to fly me out to Chicago to go to the race down there, but I ended up not going. My mom actually wouldn't let me, so she's kind of ruined it for me, but that's okay. but I know that you mentioned getting autographs and stuff. And I've been to a lot of NHRA events, and one thing I will say is that I like how with the NHRA, you pay your money to get your ticket, and that gets you into everything. That gets you into what they call Nitro Alley in Kent, and, you know, you can get autographs and stuff. But from what I've been told, with NASCAR, you have to buy, like, a special tip pass or something to get the autograph, so I don't know, it kind of seems like if you're paying for a ticket to watch like a NASCAR race, you know, kind of seems like maybe once in a while they could include the pit pass, you know, I really like NHRA events, and I would really love to go to a NASCAR event. actually, my dad and I were talking about going to Speed Week next season.
Oh, cool.
So hopefully we can make that happen.
I've been to a couple of the Speed Week events. We're going to the, what they have is the opening of Speed Weeks, the Rolex 24 at Daytona in January, in late January. And my father and I already have plans to visit that, the race for that. I'm going to be interviewing a couple of drivers around there and moving around, and it'll be, Daytona is always an awesome track. It's got an aura to it, plus it's laid out a little bit better than a lot of the other NASCAR tracks. And the issue with the pit pass isn't quite as bad there in Daytona. You do still have to pay extra for the fan zone there in Daytona. But with that, you can see into the garage areas through the little back window. Occasionally you can get the people to stop for autographs. They do have autograph sessions there. So that's kind of cool. But I think in part, and this might be taken the wrong way by some future guests, and if so, they can explain to me why it seems this way. But it seems like the NASCAR drivers aren't quite as interested in interacting with the fans as some of the other drivers, like the NHRA drivers, and to a certain extent the sports car drivers. It seems like all they want to do is just go from their hauler into the race car and race. And that's great if they are good racers and that is what they get paid to do. But they're also there because the fans are paying good money for tickets, and the fans are paying attention to them on television. And if you're just going to walk by and nonchalantly sign your name on something and really not even realize what you're signing when you walk by, that doesn't give you a warm, fuzzy feeling about the drivers. And that's not a good way to be. Like at the NHRA events, as you mentioned, I went to one I went to the NHRA Pro Winter Warm-Up. I've been there for the past 3 years now, where they have the pro classes go out, and basically it's a warm-up for the season. They do it down here in South Florida because it is a lot warmer than most parts of the country in March. So it's also warmer in January. I think they've done January as well. And it's awesome to actually sit there and talk to the drivers, get an idea of what they're doing, get up close to the cars. In NASCAR, even in IndyCar, you can't get close to the cars. You can't see what they're doing. You can from a distance. You can from beyond a wall or whatever. But in IndyCar, you can just walk right up, and they'll tell you what they're doing. Or in IndyCar. In NHRA, you walk right up. They'll tell you what they're doing. They'll tell you why they're doing it. And they're happy to see you. And I think there's a lot of things that other series can learn from professional drag racing. So.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, I don't know how many times me and my dad have been watching NASCAR, and, you know, you see someone go up to get an autograph, and a lot of the times it's kind of like, you know, they just brush them off, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The last NHRA event I went to, it was me and my dad and my brother and my sisters, and we were walking through Nitro Alley, and Ron Capps was standing right in front of us. And, you know, we didn't even have to, like, go up to him or anything. And he just walked over and started talking to us, like, you know, like, for a second he wasn't a professional race car driver, and he was just almost a spectator like us. And that was also because he said, you know, like, NASCAR and stuff, you can't really get up close to the cars and stuff. The last NHRA race I went to, I actually got to sit in one of the top fuel dragsters. And so I thought that was a really cool experience, you know. I don't know, you know, I hope you do get an answer as to why NASCAR is kind of the way it is, because, I don't know, you're right, it does kind of seem like they could interact with your fans more. I mean, after all, you know, kind of like, you know, where would they really be without their fans? You know, like, you know, they're good drivers and stuff, but really, the sport is nothing without fans, so you do have a good point.
It seems like especially this season, there's been a slight increase in the ratings, and that's a great thing for the NASCAR chase, and I'm happy they've had the increase in ratings. But when you look at the grandstands, there's, in most cases, now this weekend notwithstanding, and also the Phoenix race, there are fewer people in the grandstands now than there were, definitely fewer than there were 10 years ago. There's fewer now than there were 5 years ago. And the economy is bad in certain parts of the country, yes, but it is improving. People have enough money if they want to go out and see a race, they can go out and see it. But they're choosing not to. They're choosing to sit there, to either sit home and turn it on, which is obvious by the increase in ratings. But it's not the same thing to go and actually show up at a race, to see the track, to see how they're laid out, to hear the cars at full song instead of hearing them at whatever level even the best sound system can't do the justice. It's a totally different experience, and it's an experience that you have to have at least once, if not multiple times. But it seems like people nowadays are moving away from that sort of thing. They're not as interested in turning up at racetracks. They're not as interested in spending a full day hanging out and seeing how the sport is. They'd rather just turn it on for a second and see, wow, there's somebody going around, and if it's my favorite driver, great. If it's not my favorite driver, I'm just going to turn it off and change channels. And that's not the way to be a good race fan. The way to be a good race fan is to enjoy the sport for what it is, to see, to understand that they're doing something amazing with these machines that other people can't do. They're pushing to the limit. They're showing they're doing the best they can, and they're doing it all for your enjoyment and for their own. People don't seem to realize that. And that's kind of the point, the reason why I started this program, that's the reason why I started writing about motorsports, is to try and get people involved in racing, to get them to go to the racetrack, to get them to understand that racing is, well, it's the only, according to Hemingway, the only two real sports are bullfighting and auto racing. Everything else is just a game. So if you enjoy that, if you enjoy auto racing, if you enjoy it for what it is, then you'll be a better person for it.
Yeah. I know that because we just actually got some new neighbors behind us, and we invited them to go to the race with us once. Anyways, they kind of just were like, oh, okay, yeah. They ended up not going. We invited them again, and they went, and, the one, I don't remember what his name was, but anyways, he told me that, he goes to the races just to watch the crashes. So I'm like, well, there's so much more to racing than just the crashes. I mean, yeah, the crashes, sometimes they're pretty cool, but, there's so much more to it than just whether they're going to crash or not. And anyways, so I think we've they ended up going a couple more times, and I know that they're a little more into it now than they like to lead on, but, racing is really, it's a great sport. It's a, I don't want to say a family sport, but I mean, it is kind of a family sport, and it's a great sport for everyone. You don't have referees dictating, whether that was a great pass or not. No, you just have the people that are helping you there, and you're on the track racing what you brought. And it's just, it's a great sport, I think. And I think a lot more people, if they took the time to just watch it and experience it, and like you said, go to the track for a day, I think a lot more people would definitely get more into it.
Going into that, the thing that we're going to be doing next week, we will tie into that a little bit. If you've ever been to the Charlotte area, they sometimes open up the race facilities, the race shops to tourists to go through and tour. So next Thursday, I've been invited to tour the Hendrick Motorsports facility to see the pit crew testing and practice, and also to do a ride along at the Charlotte Motor Speedway. So that'll be quite the experience, and I will be covering that for Speedway Digest. I'll also be mentioning that a little bit for the listeners on the program, possibly next week, probably the week after, or the early December, because the week after is Thanksgiving, and this show will not be broadcasting on Thanksgiving. I'm going to draw a little line in the sand for that. But that should be quite the experience, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to sharing it with my readers and with my fans in this program. And I thank Hendrick Motorsports and Alcon for inviting me, and it's good to know that my writing is appreciated and that the people are actually listening to this program and it's making a difference, at least in some way. So that would be good. Going back to drag racing, this weekend the NHRA Miller Yellow Drag Racing Series will come to a thundering close with the 50th annual Auto Club NHRA Finals in Pomona, California, November 14th through the 16th. The renewal of the sport's marquee event will determine the championships in all four professional racing classes of the NHRA, and qualifying and eliminations action will air on ESPN2 and ESPN3. Check local listings for times. I'd also like to invite you to check out past episodes of Thursday Night Thunder, as well as other shows on the Speedway Digest Radio Network at radio.speedwaydigest.com. You can also check out this show on Facebook by searching for Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder in the search bar. I'd like to thank all the new fans we've picked up on Facebook in the past few weeks. We've gone from just over 100 fans less than a month ago to just under 500 fans on Facebook now. So I appreciate the fact that you're taking the time to listen to the program and to follow me and the racing show on Facebook. I also invite you to read my daily Deadly articles covering all aspects of motorsports at SpeedwayDigest.com. Recently, I've done some articles covering the IHRA, their champions. The second guest on tonight's program was supposed to be Shay Holbrook. She unfortunately had a meeting this evening with one of her potential sponsors, so she's had to reschedule. But next season, she will be attempting, this season she raced in the Pirelli World Challenge. Next season, she's going to be attempting to become a drag racer, racing in the IHRA in Jet Dragsters for Larson Motorsports. Now that's a huge difference going from a road course specialist to a Jet Dragster pilot. So it'll be intriguing to hear what her reasoning behind that is. Again, I'm trying to reschedule her. She'll probably be on in like 2 weeks, but I won't make any guarantees until I hear from her personally and her public relations personnel. So who's your pick for the NASCAR champion? You still leaning on Logano?
I am. I think it's mostly because I've been a big fan of Joey Logano for a really long time, and my family always made fun of me for it. So, yeah, it's still Joey, but now I'm starting to think that maybe, just maybe, and I cannot believe I'm going to say this, but now I'm starting to think that maybe Kevin Harvick might be able to take the championship. But if Joey takes the championship, that will be just as fine, even better. I think it might be Kevin Harvick. Although, I do want Joey to take it, but like I said, I think it might be Kevin Harvick.
I'm going to have to go with either Denny Hamlin or Ryan Newman. And the reason for that is because neither one of them, technically, I don't think neither one of them should be in the chase. Neither one of them had the most stellar year. Hamlin's had a much better year than Newman has. But Newman's been, he's just been plodding along. And under the old point system, plodding along was great. And plodding along should be rewarded. But under the current point system, plodding along is not what they said it was supposed to be. It was supposed to be one of those, if you win, you're in. And he hasn't won a thing. And yet, if he finishes ahead of the other drivers, he's going to win it all. And that's a flaw in the points, and it's something that they might address, but I doubt they will. Denny Hamlin, on the other hand, he's missed one race, and he's missed part of another race. And by missing like one and a half races, wouldn't think that he'd be in the chase either. But because of the way he's finished in the other races and because of the fact that he's done well enough to move on, then he's also involved. And he has a much better success rate in Homestead than any of the drivers. He's won twice. He's won, his most recent victory was just a couple of years ago. So it'll be interesting to see who wins on Sunday. And I hope that everybody who shows up at the racetrack is a lot more comfortable than I was when it was sold out a couple of years ago. But it should be a great race. And tomorrow's race should be good, too. tomorrow. They have the package that I got for the race, because I wasn't certain about the fact whether I was going or not. The package I ended up getting is from Joey Coulter. He has two tickets for a significantly reduced rate than the one-day ticket for the race. The one-day ticket goes for $35. For the Joey Coulter package, which as of this evening was still available, two tickets were $26. That includes tax and the handling charge, even though you print it yourself, which I'll never understand, but whatever. And you get to meet Joey Coulter tomorrow at 12:30 at the Coke Zero Fan Zone, which is near the Chalet Village. So hopefully, if you're free tomorrow evening to go to the racing, if you can go to homesteadspeedway.com and click on the Joey Coulter package, that's a fabulous deal. If you're not able to meet him and you just want to go to the race, which starts at 8 p.m. tomorrow night, it's still a pretty good deal. And it's saving you more than the full person's cost of admission. And I think part of that's because his sponsor's covering the ticket price, which is pretty cool. Plus, you get free, including on the tickets, are coupons for Dairy Queen. So nothing goes better with a healthy lifestyle than Dairy Queen, of course. So I'm pretty sure none of the drivers do even set foot inside of a Dairy Queen. But you never know.
I don't believe I've ever had Dairy Queen either.
Did you watch any of the we still have a few more minutes of the program, we have like 10 minutes. Did you watch any of the press media coverage of the preview night last night for Homestead?
No. What was I doing last night? Oh, no. I remember. I was doing something last night. I think it was something with my dad. Oh, my gosh. I'm too young to be forgetting this stuff. but no, I guess, long story short, I didn't get the chance to. Was it good?
It was pretty good. The interviews with the drivers were good. Harvick made a pretty big gig at Logano because apparently he claims that Brad Keselowski was blocking in order to ensure that Logano made it into the final chase for the championship, which he might have been doing. I didn't watch the entire race that he was referring to, but that is it's a team thing, and it's one of the issues they're going to have to deal with, especially on Sunday. I'm sure there'll be some team orders going on. The part of the coverage I didn't enjoy personally is the fact that they had all four of the team owners on the stage taking questions. And for whatever reason, both the networks that are covering it, which was both Fox Sports as well as NBC Sports, didn't listen to three of the four owners. They only had Tony Stewart, and they only had like 1.5 questions that they put on the air. The rest of the time, they were just doing what we were doing. They were talking amongst themselves. Nobody cares. When they've got the four owners sitting up on stage, people want to hear what the four owners have to say. They don't want to hear what three supposed experts have to say about what they think the three owners are saying. And it's a production decision, I know, and I'm sure there was some reasoning behind it, but I don't understand what was.
It's very rare that you hear, you know, all of the owners in one spot talking together, so I'm so jealous. I really wish I would have watched it now.
Yeah. I actually had an invitation to go down there. For the past several years, I've had an invitation, but it's about, on a good day, it has to be a really good day, you can get down there in maybe an hour and 45 minutes. And that's if you're booking it, if you're really moving, if there's no traffic, if whatever. And I am a race fan. I'm interested in it, but I'm not interested in going down there for a press event in the evening for an hour and 45 minutes down the road, an hour and 45 minutes back to my house. That's not my idea of fun. When they did have the press event at the Speedway a couple of years ago, I thought about it, but I wasn't able to make it. But now they've got it at the They've had it hotel special years. I think last year they had it at one of the South Beach hotels. The year before they had it at one of the casino hotels. This year they've had it at Doral. And Doral's, that's way the heck gone out there. And it's not my idea of fun. I don't like the Donald Trump hotels very much. Just a personal thing, whatever. But the drivers seem to enjoy it. They like playing golf. And as I discussed earlier, I think the press thing is cool, but it's not as good as seeing the people on the track. And that's part of my whole deal with covering more sports is I think see things from a fan perspective. I've only rarely gotten press credentials for the races because I'd rather actually watch the race from outside in the air, being able to wander around, than sitting in a press box or in a media center and watching it on television, waiting for the people to come in and talk to you. That's not my idea of being a real race fan. That's not my idea of fun. So.
No, I don't blame you.
The one guy who I've dealt with before, who is Brian Sellers, PR guy, Tom Moore from Dark Horse Autosport. He's a big race fan, but he generally gets stuck in the media centers for the whole race, and he tries to get out and watch the actual racing. And he used to represent a couple of NASCAR drivers. I know he's also represented other sports, IndyCar and NHRA. But getting stuck in a media center is not my idea of fun. Not that I wouldn't like to do it at least once, but wouldn't be my first choice.
No. Yeah, well, I know, like, even, you know, like, when I go to, like I said, I've never been to a NASCAR race, so, I can't really relate there, but as far as, like, NHRA events, you're constantly moving around because, you know, you're constantly going to see the cars, you're going to see the drivers, and you're right, you couldn't really do that from a box.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would be a good experience, you know, like you said, try it at least once. But no, that wouldn't personally be my favorite place to watch it either.
Yeah. Well, even our local track at Palm Beach International Raceway, which I've asked some of the past guests about, and that's where they have the NHRA Pro Winter Warm-Up at. When you go hang out in their little press box, it's great to sit in the air conditioning, but that's about it. And you sit in there for like 10 minutes, you have your Gatorade, and then you're out. But there are even people who are sitting there the whole time on their phones or on their computers. And that's not, like I said, that's not my idea of being a race fan. That's basically just being a reporter. And that's fine. People have the right to read about the things and see everything. But if you're a real race fan, you want to actually see the race. And that's my whole point. If you're a real race fan, you want to actually be able to experience the race to see it and not just sit in front of some monitor and that's about it. So.
Yeah.
So you want to give a couple tidbits of information about the next week's guest, Mr. Austin Weber? Anything the listeners should know before he's on the program next week?
Well, Mr. Austin Weber, he's by far one of the nicest dudes anyone will ever get the chance to talk to. He's really shy, so he's kind of hard to talk to, but, he's really shy. But when he comes out of his shell, like I think he will on this show, you'll definitely see what I mean. He's got awesome stories. He's been racing for a really long time. He's been all over, so I think he will be a great one to listen to just because, you know, like I said, he's got experience in a sprint car, which I don't have yet, but he actually, when I first started racing, he had been racing for a few more years than I have, and so he kind of gave me advice. And so when he started racing the same car as I did, I got to kind of give him advice, so that was really nice. But like I said, he is one of the nicest kids, and I think everybody will really enjoy listening to him.
Well, that should be it. He should be a good guest for the program, then. Be sure to tune next week when our guest will be former NASCAR star and friend of the program, Jeremy Mayfield, as well as the aforementioned Austin Weber. And, as I said, next week, Michael Mullally will take over some of the hosting duties because I will be basically away from the computer and probably sitting in the Charlotte Douglas International Airport and calling in from there, which will be an experience in and of itself, but we shall see how that goes. Once again, I'd like to thank Michael for helping me out with the program, especially on the show when we ended up with one fewer guest than I originally anticipated.
Of course.
I'd like to thank everybody for listening and look forward to seeing you again next week in the Thunderdome.